and the editorial director of eWoman Publishing Network, an unbelievable network to inspire, train, and uplift women, I imagine, just about all over the globe as they write their nonfiction books and get all the help that they need. It's just an incredible organization. So welcome, Jan.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
Great. Now, we are co-hosting this show, and Martha has done a wonderful job preparing an outline, which I'm going to let the two of you delve into as we go along. I just wanted to frame the show for 1 minute and remind everybody that Happiness for Women Only is dedicated to helping women find purpose, meaning, joy, and all sorts of good things in their own lives by reinvesting themselves, reinventing themselves, regenerating themselves around their personal talents, interests, even lost potential, coping skills, and of course, their capacities for something that I see on the outline for our talk is called gumption. And I think it's just a marvelous concept, and I gather that, Martha, you may want to hop in and focus with Jan a little bit around this concept, which really, really is a motivating concept for women. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, Jan King. Jan, you have done so many amazing things with your life, and looking at you, people would think you had a perfect beginning and all the things you needed as a child to go on and be such an amazing woman. And as Barbara said, we have a show here that is attempting to help women discover genuine, lasting happiness. When I heard your story, Jan, I thought, how inspirational for those of us who began our lives in less than optimal family environments. So if you could please share with us what it was like for you as a girl and as a teenager in your family and your parents' expectations for the woman you were going to become.
Great. Well, again, it's great to be with you. You know, I grew up in a typical kind of middle-class home, nothing that was horrible, there was no abuse as we traditionally think of it, but I certainly did not have very nurturing parents, and particularly for girls. My mother hadn't finished college, and my father really didn't think there was much that girls needed to do other than getting married and anything that was associated with that. So when I was a girl, and then when I was a teenager, I, like so many people, went to school with some marvelous people who intended to go to college and do all sorts of things with their lives, and I luckily had that as a kind of peer support group rather than my family, and I always knew I'd go to college and do those sorts of things. But probably one of the more interesting parts of my story, my parents, when I got to my senior year of high school and was ready to apply to colleges, said to me, "Why do you want to do that? We don't have any money for you to go to college anyway." And this had been something that I had made the assumption that would be there, since this was what was happening in all of my friends' families. And they were pretty clear, especially my dad, in saying women don't need any sort of additional education, so it's great you did well in high school, but, you know, we think you don't need this and this wouldn't be the right thing for you.
Mm.
Which didn't stop me at all, so your subject of gumption is really a good one. I didn't give a second thought to it. I knew I was going to college, and I got scholarships and just did what I needed to do. But it certainly left me with a lasting feeling that I certainly didn't realize had been a part of my upbringing until the time I was ready to go to college, where it was more, it was said more verbally, some things that had really been with me and with our family situation the entire time, which is kind of these expectations that were extremely low, or of kind of a standard nature of what my parents thought was appropriate, that really things had changed a lot, society had changed a lot, and their thinking hadn't. So,
right. So when you, at that pivotal time in high school, when you realized they were not supporting your decision to go to college or thought it was totally frivolous or whatever, how were you feeling? You said it, you went forward anyway. Did you have any misgivings or guilt or what have you?
I certainly had no misgivings or guilt. I was angry with them more than anything else that they felt that way. And, you know, like many other women, I've certainly dealt with unworthiness issues that I'm sure stem from my upbringing and whether I should really be doing this or not. But at that point, I had a mission, and my mission was to get myself in college. And I had such a strong mission that I wasn't in the world of feeling sorry for myself. I had something so big that I needed to do that it wasn't till much later I got to that.
Let me interrupt and just add on that in my original research with the Enchanted Self Project and Positive Psychology for Women, I had asked women what sorts of negative messages they absorbed in childhood, and many came up with the type of thing that you're talking about, Jan, but I also discovered that for many there were positive moments and other mentors and other situations that if they could recapture and give life to again would become a sort of passionate thread that would keep them moving. And I wondered, just for curiosity's sake, you know, were there other people like neighbors, grandparents, a particular teacher that maybe really were fueling your tank so that you were passionate to go to college?
I think you're right. We had a very small and no extended family, no grandparents left, so it wasn't family. But I think it was the school environment. I was very good at school and got a lot of positive reinforcement from almost every teacher I had. And then I was also friends with many other people who this is what we were all about at the time. So to be part of the group I wanted to be in school, this is what we were all doing and this is what we were working towards. So I absolutely think that I had a support group in a really large sense outside of my home, and without that I'm sure it would have been a different story.
Well, thank goodness you did, because that obviously this passion, you know, once you can get in touch with a journey you're taking, then I think a lot of the guilt and other things can be somewhat diminished, although may still exist in some fashion. So go ahead. I'm curious what happened the rest of your life up to now. But, Martha, you may want to focus it on a particular question.
Well, I'm actually thinking of asking her to move forward to the time when glory became yours with your professional and social success and obviously the financial rewards associated with that. So, Jan, would you like to tell us a bit about when you finished college, what your vision was? Excuse me. And now you're in a truly altruistic position, so perhaps you'd like to talk a bit about the evolution of your professional life.
Absolutely, and just allow me to go back and say that I had a younger sister, and I think very much as a result of seeing what I was doing, she took the same path, and she's now many years ago graduated from law school and is a practicing attorney. So we had a real change in our family situation, and I think she has now become a great support for me and I for her and what we're doing together in many years later. I had absolutely no idea when I got out of college what I wanted to do. I considered going on to graduate school because it had been really a very difficult financial time for me. I decided to take some time out and then, of course, didn't end up going back, as happens to so many people, but found that I, during college, found that I absolutely loved writing and I loved books and anything having to do with the publishing process. So I got a job right out of college and then continued. I was on the West Coast, so we were not in the hotbed of publishing, but there was certainly book publishing going on the West Coast. And so I ended up working for a small to mid-sized publishing company and ended up, after 7 years, running the company. The founder was ill and died a year later, and I ended up being the CEO of it. We had 50 employees, and when the founder died, the family was trying to determine what to do, and we ended up, as an employee group, buying the company. So I learned, I got to the right places, I think, through my passion for books and writing, and then took on a really new big challenge, which was running a company, something I had not ever intended to do. But again, it was going back to the subject of gumption, I felt like I was in the right place to do it and that it needed to be done, and there was nobody else there to do it. So I decided to step up and make sure it happened, which it did. And a few years after that, we all got a very large bid for the company and ended up selling the company as well. So this idea of going ahead and doing things despite what fears you may have because they are so meaningful and so important to you has certainly been a dominant theme in my life.
So what fears, if you don't mind my asking, Jan, when you were at that place where you were about to assume position as CEO, did you have fears, and may I ask what they may have been?
Well, you know, I think part of my coping mechanism for doing things is not to pay a lot of attention to the fears. I can go backwards and tell you a little bit about what they were, but at the time, I was so determined that I absolutely didn't pay any attention and overrode those. But, you know, certainly taking the responsibility for 50 people and their paychecks every week was a
right.
big fear for me, that I was responsible for making sure that these people had their families fed, I think was the number one thing. Could I actually do it? I had no experience whatsoever in managing a financial organization of this sort, and what if it didn't work? Then what? So those kind of fears of could I really accomplish it, could I do it, and if I couldn't, how I would still be responsible for figuring out what needed to happen next were some of the fears I faced.
So I think for women listening in terms of reinterpreting this into a base of happiness, and we know that we feel happy when we're thriving and we feel invested in what we're doing, that the self-knowledge that we should probably downplay our fears, size them up to see how realistic they are, but not let them embed themselves in our self-talk, is something that we may manually sort of have to learn on a case-by-case basis.
I think that's really true. In my case, I also felt like I was doing it for and with a group of people, which was very motivating for me in terms of being able to have people to talk to, not specifically about these fears, but there was something bigger than just me involved, and that helps a lot when you have something that means something to you, and you're willing to override the fears in order to see that happen.
Well, as you were saying too, Jan, instead of focusing on what if I can't, you put your energy into how can I make this happen, and the whole process of that challenge was what occupied your energies in a very positive way.
Yes, and of course at the time, you're just feeling like you need to do what you need to do, but you're right, I really didn't give it any thought, and it's, upon reflection later, I don't know what gave me the idea I could do it, but I had the idea somewhere that I could do it, and, that was part of me. I certainly didn't worry enough to keep me from trying to do it.
So when the company was sold, that was what year?
That was 1998.
1998. Did you have a sense of what you might do at that point?
Well, I really didn't. The way the company was sold was that we were going to sell it to a larger company that was interested in the content we'd accumulated as a publisher, and I was supposed to stay on as their head of the West Coast region. And 2 weeks before the sale took place, they let me know that I had negotiated so hard on the behalf of the employees, they didn't think I would be a very good employee there.
Wow.
So I had 2 weeks, and I knew we were going to sell it anyway. It was the best thing for the employees. So I had 2 weeks to suddenly think about it, and because they put me in this position, I ended up negotiating with them for a 3-year non-compete. So I was paid a salary for 3 years, and that was one of the most difficult transitions I ever went through, from being employed at a position that was important and lots of busy, important things to do every day, to literally signing papers on a Friday and not having a job, having a salary, but not having something to do or that was meaningful in my life. And to really have to reconstruct that was quite a challenge.
So are you saying you did have to report to the office, or you did not?
I did not. In fact, they did not want me to report to the office.
You were a dangerous influence.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, so was that when you started thinking about the eWomen Publishing Network you organized?
Well, it wasn't directly. Because I had a non-compete, I could not be in the publishing industry for 3 years. And I really felt at that point like so much would have changed in the publishing industry in those 3 years that I would almost have to find another source of income. that I would really be a dinosaur by the time I came back to it. So I went a different direction. I wrote a book on business planning and did a lot of strategic and business planning as a career for 3 years plus. And but during that time, I never stopped thinking about publishing, and I could really see after the three-year period ended that the publishing industry hadn't changed very much, and that as opposed to being a publisher, which is what I'd done before, that the tides were changing and authors were beginning to come in on their own and have a lot more power and influence to own their own intellectual property. And I got very interested in how authors could be the captains of their own success, and particularly for women, because I had seen, we had not published very many books by women when I was a publisher, because not many, we didn't get many proposals, they weren't very well done, the writing was somewhat weak, and this is just a gross generalization, but that was my experience of seeing women's books come into me, and I felt like I could really do something to make a change on that.
And just for the listeners who aren't familiar with Merit Publishing, it is a financial publisher, pretty much? Is that correct?
We did all sorts of business-to-business, mostly publications. We also had trade publications, but we did focus on personal financial kinds of things as well as business finance.
So I'm just wondering if perhaps the submissions at that time were not as strong because maybe women at that time were not as elevated in business as they are today. Could that have been part of the problem?
I think that was part of the problem. We did do a lot of human resource kind of publishing, and even then we would get more submissions from women who were in that area. But, the women's manuscripts that I saw then and still see today have a tendency to use words like, I think this is true, or I believe, or in my opinion, as opposed to really believing it and stating things as fact. And they undermined themselves. Now, definitely part of it was the fact we didn't see as many as you probably would today. But there were also some really telling signs that women were not feeling their own power the same way men were. And when you read a book, you've got to really be strong. You've got to get it across the page. And it wasn't happening the same way.
So how have you moved forward in helping women meet some of these challenges, which really go pretty deep? The way we talk is often the way we really feel, and we're somewhat, still, many of us are somewhat intimidated by the public and business and making money and all sorts of things.
I completely agree with what you said, and I think the I work directly with women to help them figure out how they would like to get books published and what books or how they can create books that will be publishable, in other words, that will really reach an audience, not just to write for themselves, but if they are doing this either as a business or even not as a business, but something where they want to impact people, they want to leave a legacy, they want to influence people, they need to write in a way that people will take it in. And so much of my work with people is almost, as I call it, a book therapist, of sitting and talking. What is it you want to say to somebody? What is it you really feel about yourself? What is the elephant we're missing in the room here that if only someone would talk about it, it would unleash conversation that maybe all of us should be having.
And for those listeners who are interested in exploring the opportunity of writing a nonfiction book, Jan's website is ewomenpublishingnetwork.com.
Exactly.
It's very interesting, and I have to bring it back to Martha and myself a little bit for a minute, because Martha and I have mutually mentored and gotten to know each other for many years now, and at one point I was working on a nonfiction self-help book around the Seven Enchanted Gateways to Happiness, and it involved some wonderful conversations between my adult self and my inner child, and we liked it very, very much, but I couldn't find an agent that really liked it, at least in the form, you know, that it was in in the first efforts of manuscript. And the irony is that that book rebirthed itself as a fiction book that I just have had come out a few months ago for adult women called The Truth, I'm 10, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. And it's a girl's diary, so it's it's a girl speaking from her heart about certain truths that women need to stay in touch with, which of course have embedded in them the seven gateways to happiness. And so I moved from nonfiction to fiction as my book was birthed.
I think that's a really important thing to say to women in general, that sometimes you think that you want to head one direction and then you find through a series of things that happen to you that maybe it's better as another direction. Certainly the book journey is that way a lot, whether it's fiction to nonfiction or even just changing the way you're looking at something. Absolutely. I mean, these days I would love to help somebody like you not necessarily go to an agent, but find just the right publisher for them or decide to self-publish, which is now a better option than it used to be.
Absolutely.
So, Jan, what advice would you give to a woman who yearns to transcend possibly her fears or imposed limitations, messages she had as a young girl that remain with her?
You know, I think the most important thing, and from my vantage point, is when people want to write books but they're not sure how to get over these natural fears, is to just start really small. Just do a piece of it. You aren't going to get over that fear all at once, but you're going to build confidence little by little as you have success. The other thing I would tell women is to work with someone else and work with someone who understands where you're coming from and is really willing to be there for you. Those of us who didn't get those messages as children never quite have them built in the same way, and we really need support and assistance of other people on an ongoing basis where you're feeling down and someone can read something and say, are you kidding me? This is great. This is just genius in here. Keep going. Nah. Don't stop.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you said it. You really said it. Since we have only about 4 minutes left, Jan, do you want to tell people where they can find you, why they should find you, and then Martha, you go on and sum up, or, you know, I just want to make sure she has time to get her stuff out.
Great. No, I appreciate that. As Martha said, I have founded about 3.5 years ago now an organization called eWomen Publishing Network, and our mission is to help women create books of any sort. We really do focus on nonfiction, mostly because we find that's where people in general have the most success in publishing. What I do is I'm a publishing strategist, so as opposed to being a writing coach or something else, my background's in publishing. So someone who wants to get published, I work with them to give them some new ideas, new directions, and connect them in with the right way for them to get published. And most of the women I work with are writing inspirational books, self-help books, biographies, all sorts of kinds of books. My expertise is in nonfiction, so that's the reason for nonfiction versus fiction, which is a wonderful area to work in, just not one that I have the same level of connections and contacts. I would suggest any woman should work with me or someone like me if she has an inkling of an idea that she would like to write a book and just wants to explore this. I think writing a book is a lot more about self-development than anything else. Most people who write books take big journeys with them psychologically, whether it is to just find a forum to expand your own ideas. Many people are coaches and doing other things where they have an audience for their material, and they're trying to make sure that it's as crisp and concise as possible in book form, and they really find it helps them in their coaching practice and their speaking and other things they do when they've forced themselves to go through this process of writing a book and doing it. A book ends up being in a pretty linear fashion. You just can't escape that. So going through the process can be extremely valuable. So love to work with any women who are finding themselves in that journey, feeling a little lost, not feeling supported. There is a lot of support.
There's about 500,000 people, women listening. Better get those phones ready. And actually, how can they find you, though? Say that again.
They can send me through the website or my email. Let me give you both. The website is www.ewomen, W-O-M-E-N, Publishing Network, eWomen Publishing Network, all one word, .com. And my email is just jan@ewomenpublishingnetwork.com.
Right, and Jan, what I don't think you have said yet is that your service runs in a year, an annual kind of subscription, and it affords coaching, education. Would you mind just listing some of the benefits of joining up?
Now, thank you for reminding me to do that. It is we've created a membership organization because we really feel that women who feel they need to buy an hour at a time of service are less likely to do that, and we want people to use this service a lot. So it includes unlimited email and phone coaching for over the course of a year. Lots of webcasts and training classes. Not included, but also part of what we do is an annual conference for 2 days in Dallas in July, where a lot of aspiring authors and authors get together and discuss some of these issues that they go through. Just so you know, too, this is an annual program. However, we have many women who continue with us past the first year because it can take a lot longer than just 1 year to do a book. But so many women, too, feel like, oh, if I can't get it done in a year, that's just too long. So we've started out with 1 year, and then you can continue as well.
Right.
That's fabulous. And I think we're almost out of town. Out of town. I'd like to be out of town. I think that you should tell us, Martha, how to find you and maybe the name of one of your major e-books, which I'm hoping will soon be paperback also.
It's in process as we speak. Thank you, Barbara. I'm Martha Trowbridge. My website is www.marthatrowbridge.org. And there's a contact page if any of you would like to write to me. I'd love to hear from you. There is an e-book on my site, The Woman You Were Born to Be, and I am soon, hopefully by the first part of January, we'll have a print edition available of Wings of Self-Love, Inspiration for Shattered Women.
And I am Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, positive psychologist and happiness coach. And as mentioned before, my project is The Enchanted Self. You can find me at www.enchantedself.com. My latest book is The Truth, I'm 10, I'm
has
Smart.
Has joined the conference.
And I know everything. And I'm so excited about this book that it will now be out for girls between 10 and 14 called The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. So bye for now.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. If you enjoyed the interview and the discussion with Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and our co-host, Martha Trowbridge, then you'll love hearing them all over again. Go to over to http://internetvoicesradio.com. On the left-hand side of the page, hit Archives. A list of names will appear, and you will find Dr. Holstein there or on a side box. On the right-hand side of the page, you will also find Dr. Holstein in there. So now you have two places to look for her. You don't have any excuses. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. And I would like to leave you this statement from Shirley Chisholm, who said, defeat should not be the source of discouragement, but a stimulus to keep plodding. Our next program begins shortly on the proper care and feeding of your soul with Deborah Lentz-Hill and our co-host David Lentz. Thank you very much for listening, and remember, keep listening.